It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. WFAN and WFAN FM, New York.
Wow, good morning and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Masters Sunday, April 11th. Hey, there's no Sunday quite like Masters Sunday, and today should be no exception. For as long as I've been covering the Masters, and this is my 23rd, the final round of the Masters always offers up intense drama. It doesn't matter who's leading and by how many. There is always the potential for more glory or complete disaster. So even though Hideki Matsuyama leads by four heading into the final round, you never know what can happen, especially on the second nine at Augusta National. So what are your favorite moments from the Masters? I'll tell you my top three right after I tell you that Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. We all have our favorite moments at the Masters, and here are my three favorite moments and why. First of all, the chip heard around the world in 2005 when Tiger hit that infamous chip from off the green on the par 3-16th. John Minko was the update anchor here on The Fan, and he threw it to me at the 20 for my report from Augusta National. And his timing was impeccable because as he was throwing it to me to do my report, Tiger had just hit that chip shot. And I did a play-by-play of the call from the moment Tiger hit it, the ball landing softly on the green at that just precise spot he was aiming for, and then the ball tracking down about 20 feet or so down the slope to the cup, the Nike ball pausing on the lip of the cup for a few seconds before dropping into the hole. Now, I know I have a copy of that call somewhere at home in my vast abyss of archives and memorabilia, and I'm sure FAN has that call somewhere. But let's hear again how the great Vern Lundquist on CBS Sports called it.
There it comes. Oh, my goodness. Have you seen anything like that?
Classic, classic, classic call, and just classic moment, and my top memory, just based on the timing that Minko threw it to me at that point. And of course, it was just so exciting. I just couldn't stay in my seat in the media room there at Augusta National. So, and then Tiger's caddy, Steve Williams, later said the Tiger aimed for an old ball mark, which was the size of a dime on the green, and the Tiger hit it on the fly, right on the money, and the ball made the turn and rolled down the slope to the hole. It was just classic, and I was so thrilled I had the opportunity to call it live. My second favorite moment was when Phil Mickelson, forever the bridesmaid, in major competition, winless in his first 46 major starts, won his first major title, his first of three green jackets. It was 2004. And he seemingly coaxed that 18-foot putt into the hole for birdie on the 18th hole, beating Ernie Els by one shot. You know, and I just had this feeling. I knew Phil was going to make it. And the drama was so intense. And it was just so much fun being there and reporting on Phil's first major win and to do it at Augusta National. And when that putt dropped, you remember seeing Phil just jump, what, 3 feet in the air? I mean, that jump was hysterical. And I can still see the joy on Phil's face and his leap like it was yesterday. And you could hear the roars just rocking the golf course and the media center. And I was just so delighted for Phil. And, you know, Phil is just such a compelling personality. I could have smacked him when he seemingly lost his mind at Shinnecock during that U.S. Open in 2018. You know, when he ran after his putt on the 13th green and hit the ball while it was moving. I mean, who does that? But aside from that moment of intensity, Phil has provided us with some amazing golf moments. And that first Masters win is one of them. And then, of course, my third favorite Masters moment was Tiger winning his fifth green jacket in 2019. 43 years old. 11 years removed from winning his last major title at Torrey Pines back in 2008. And who wasn't touched when you saw Tiger hugging his kids and his mom and as he walked off the final green into the scoring area, coming full circle, seeing his transformation as a person after years of scandal and embarrassment, and then all that physical pain, all the injuries, all the surgeries, his incredible impact on the world of golf and sports. And, you know, I root for good stories. I root for comebacks. And now we root for Tiger to make a full recovery after that scary car crash this past February. This morning, we will connect with Ron Cyrak, the veteran sports writer and contributor to the Golf Channel. And we'll also visit with legendary putting coach, Dr. Craig Farnsworth, nicknamed the Putt Doctor. And one of Craig's students has been Hideki Matsuyama. So I'm sure Dr. Farnsworth will share his insight on Hideki and his incredible round yesterday and how some of the other pros handle the challenging green complexes of Augusta National. Craig also has worked with Dustin Johnson. So we'll talk to him about what happened with DJ this week, who did not make the cut, as you know. So Hideki Matsuyama, I feel like I've been watching him for a very long time. He's a five-time winner on the PGA Tour. He's won eight times on the Japan Golf Tour. I remember watching him at the U.S. Open in 2017 at Erin Hills. He and actually Brian Harman came in second. And Brian's had a very good Masters this week so far. But they were four shots behind Brooks Koepka at that U.S. Open at Erin Hills. And Hideki's best finish at the Masters was back in 2015. He finished in fifth place. He tied for fourth at the PGA Championship, and he tied for sixth at the 2013 Open Championship. And, you know, I've watched him. He's just has a great iron game, always been a very solid putter. And I've often wondered why Hideki hasn't won a major yet. And he's such a good ball striker. Well, he'll try to become the first Japanese man to win a major championship. And he put together that stunning 7-under-65 yesterday, featuring five birdies, an eagle on 15, and the only bogey-free round of the week. And his heroics all took place after the weather delay, after the storm passed. The level of his game rose, while the level of Justin Rose's game dropped a bit when he returned after the weather delay. And it's funny, Hideki said he waited out the storm by looking at his cell phone in his car. So his 7-under-65 yesterday produced just one highlight after another. He sunk a 20-footer for birdie on the 11th after punching out from under the trees. He sunk a 10-footer for birdie on the 12th. He smacked a 5-iron to within 5 feet on the 15th for eagle to grab the lead at 9-under. Then he hit another amazing shot to the par 3 16th, sunk a 10-footer for birdie there. And then he made another gorgeous approach shot on 17 and birdied that one. And then he came up with that par save on the 18th after hitting over the greens. So what a win it would be for Japan if Matsuyama could pull it off. And of course, his fellow countrywoman, Tsubasa Kachitani, won the Augusta National Women's Amateur. We talked about that last week. We'll talk to Ron Cyrak in a couple minutes about the pressure that perhaps these Japanese players are under. We know Japan is golf crazed, and we'll talk about the culture and the expectations placed on some of their top athletes, if not all of their top athletes. Four guys are four shots behind: Xander Schauffele, Mark Leishman, Justin Rose, Will Zalatoris. And Matsuyama will start at 240 with Xander Schauffele in the final pairing. Schauffele has been close, really close. He's close to winning a major title, close but no cigar yet. He shot a 468 to get to 7-under yesterday. And back in 2019, he tied for second, one shot behind Tiger Woods, the winner. He's had five top five finishes in majors. And actually in 2018, Schauffele was tied for the lead at the Open Championship, but he ended up losing by two shots to Francesco Molinari. I really thought Justin Rose was going to hold on. You know, I just think Rose is too good of a player to have only won one major. And I was at the U.S. Open in 2013 at Merion when Rose won that, his first and only major title. He scrambled yesterday to shoot even par. He had a birdie-birdie start. He bogeyed 4 and 5. He drained that 25-footer for birdie for the sole lead at 8-under before Matsuyama went on that magical ride. And those two par saves on 17 and 18, Rose got up and down for par. Those were huge. So if Matsuyama falters in any way, my pick from the four guys tied in second place who could win, I'd say, would be Justin Rose. He has looked very sharp most of the week, starting with that 65 he shot in the first round. And, you know, he's been runner-up at the Masters in 2015 and 2017. He knows the course. He knows where to hit the ball. Mark Leishman, the Aussie, one of the four guys tied for second. Wouldn't he love to join Adam Scott as a Masters champion from Australia? And Will Zalatoris, what a future this 24-year-old has. He's a Masters rookie, but he looks like he's been in this pressure-filled situation forever. And I love this quote. He had the best quote of the weekend when he found himself in the final pairing with Justin Rose in round three, and he said, "If I'm stupid enough to think I can play here, then I'm stupid enough to think I can win here." Brilliant quote. And he could become the first Masters rookie to win since Fuzzy Zeller back in 1979. All right, a couple more comments here before we get into a break. Corey Connors from Canada, he's playing lights out at 6-under. He's five shots back. He shot a 4-under 68, and his round included an ace on the par 3 sixth. He used an 8-iron from 182 yards. And then there's Jordan Spieth, who was actually my pick last Sunday morning. At 5-under, Spieth is six shots back. Spieth is back. I mean, his confidence, his swagger, his intensity never left, which is great. Earlier in the week, he spoke about how his winless drought humbled him. He learned a lot of patience. He said he spent a year where he forced a lot of things, and, you know, he's not a patient guy. He said he learned patience through his struggles. He learned that less is more. And I really think that the way Jordan Spieth handled his winless drought was very admirable. I mean, to win two majors in 2015, the Masters and the U.S. Open, and then he had the second at the PGA Championship that same year, and then that win in 2017 at the Open Championship. And then to go 82 starts without a win, 1,351 days, somebody calculated. And yesterday, I mean, he's provided drama all week. Did you see that shot he hit on the par 5 eighth? He had a hit from the left, his tee shot landing somewhere over the bushes into the pine straw. He smacked it out of the pine straw. He was about 95 yards out, the ball landing on the green, and it rolled within 2.5 feet or so to the hole where he made birdie there. And that was after he doubled the seventh. On Thursday, after that triple on the ninth, he birdied 10, and then he eagled the par 5 15th. You have to admire how Jordan Spieth handles adversity. All right, well, we'll get into, you know, Rory McIlroy, what happened to Rory. He didn't make the cut. We'll get into DJ. He didn't make the cut. And we'll talk about, you know, does Hideki Matsuyama continue his fine play and prevail? And if he falters, who will take over the top spot and go on to win the green jacket? We'll visit with veteran golf writer and Golf Channel contributor Ron Cyrak when we come back. But first of all, let me tell you, at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're extending our title sponsorship of the Travelers Championship through 2030. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region. Thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Wow, gotta love that music. It puts you in the mood. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. Hope you're having a great morning so far. If you're on your way to the golf course, I wish you an amazing round and hit them straight, and hopefully you'll be inspired by the play of these guys this week. Veteran golf journalist and Golf Channel contributor Ron Sirach joins us now from Augusta National. Welcome to Talking Golf, Ron. How are you?
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, I always love connecting with you, and let's get right into it. As much as I respect the play of Hideki Matsuyama, I can honestly say I would never have guessed that he would be heading into the final round, the leader by four. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, he's a great ball striker that we've been expecting a lot from for a while now. You know, he made his debut here 10 years ago as an amateur. He came in, he won the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship, got an Masters invitation because of that, and finished tied for 27th. First time he ever saw the golf course. He's been in the top 25 times here. What's always been the question about his game, great ball striker, great iron player. He's shaky with the putter, and boy, you really, really need to have a solid putter to handle the greens at Augusta. So we're not surprised to see him in contention, but it'll be interesting to see if he can close the deal today. He's had a couple of other chances in majors, PGA Championship 2017, and he made five bogeys on the back nine. So we'll see how he holds up today.
Definitely. I mean, as I said earlier in the show, anything can happen. I don't care if you have a four-shot lead or what, especially on that second nine at Augusta National. You can either triumph and just have glory, or you can have total disaster. So that's what makes it so exciting. And but talk about, he's 29 years old. He's seeking to become the first male player from Japan to win a major title. And there's so much pressure on him. Can you talk about perhaps the pressure that the Japanese players face in general?
Yeah, you know, there have been a lot of really great male golfers coming out of Japan. Go back to the Ozaki brothers, Jumbo Joe and Jet, Ryo Ishikawa, Tommy Nakajima, Shingo Katayama, but none of them have won majors. And, you know, I don't know if you ever covered Ichiro Suzuki when he was playing baseball, but the Japanese media contingent that travels with their athletes is phenomenal. I mean, you're talking dozens of photographers and writers who are following their every move. So there is a lot of pressure put on them. And particularly, you know, for Matsuyama this year, this is an Olympic year, and the Olympics are going to be held in Tokyo. So there's even more attention on their athletes. I do think, in a strange way, that Hideki could be benefiting by some of the COVID restrictions that are going on here. There is much less media than normal. There is way, way less Japanese media here than normal. So he may be going out today with smaller galleries, smaller media contingent, and playing with a little less pressure than he might have on him in a normal year.
That's a good point. And, you know, he's very shy, right? He's a humble guy. I know he uses a translator. He does understand, you know, some English. I saw a fun little snippet on Golf TV where he's teaching Tiger and Rory and Jason Day some Japanese. Did you see that video? It's very, very cute. But, you know, he is very shy, and he had mentioned that he actually likes it that there's not as many Japanese media following him around this week.
You know, I remember on the LPGA, they had a star from Japan, Ai Miyazato, and her rookie year, there was about 20 Japanese reporters and photographers who follow her from tournament to tournament. Well, that spring, Ichiro got hurt during baseball spring training. So all the Japanese media that was covering Ichiro came over to cover Ai Miyazato. So all of a sudden, there was now like 60 people following her around the golf course. And that's an amazing amount of pressure to play under, where you are going to, you're playing for national pride as well as you're playing for your own individual achievement.
All right, let's turn to Will Zalatoris. Man, he's a Masters rookie, Ron.
He's a piece of work, man. You know, 24 years old. Yep, went 3 years to Wake Forest. Nothing bothers him.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like he's been a contender forever, right? And this is his first year playing the Masters. It's only his third major.
He hits a bad shot and he laughs. You know, he's sort of the anti Billy Horschel out there. You know, nothing seems to get under his skin. And it will be fascinating to see how he holds up today. But you know, he pointed out he's had no status on any tour for a couple years. He started the 2019 season ranked 2006th in the world rankings. He's worked his way up to 45th. He said, look, I've had the Monday qualifier tournament, so I've had to make putts on the last hole just to make the cut. I've been grinding every tournament that I've played for 2 years out here because I have no status. So I think he's looking at everything that's happening here this week as gravy. You know, it's like when you ask him, are you nervous? He said, what? This is my dream, is to be in the Masters, to be in contention to the Masters. So I'm not nervous. This is what I've been trying to do my entire life.
Yeah, he's just incredible. What a success story so quickly, right? What are your thoughts? You think he has what it takes to perhaps prevail today? And wouldn't that be interesting? He would be the first Masters rookie since Fuzzy Zeller back in 1979 to win if he could pull it off.
Well, you know, when one person separates from the pack the way that Matsuyama has here, he has a four-stroke lead. You only really need one player to stumble to let everybody back in. Say Matsuyama goes out and shoots 74 today. That would get him in the clubhouse at 9 under par. Well, that certainly puts those four people at 7 under in contention. That puts Corey Connor at 6 other in contention, Jordan Spieth at 5 under. So it all depends on what Matsuyama does today. You know, if you're watching this tournament, to me, in my mind, the crucial holes are the first 7 holes in this golf course. If you can step to the 8th tee, even par on your round, you have a chance to score. But the first, second, and third hardest holes on the golf course so far are number 7, number 5, number 4. Number 1's a brutal starting hole. Let's see how Matsuyama gets out of the box. If he can handle those first 7 holes without giving back a lot of strokes, and then you get into the scoring holes. We saw what he did. The genius of this golf course, he shot 30 on the back 9 yesterday. That's what I love about Augusta. It rewards great shots.
That's right. And it was after the storm, the weather delay. He came out and adjusted beautifully to, you know, perhaps the slower greens, whereas Justin Rose really kind of struggled when he came back out after the weather delay. So it'll be interesting to see. What are your expectations about course conditions today?
Right now, the course is it feels like it's in really, really good scoring shape. We had that rain yesterday. It did slow the course down a bit. There's no rain in the forecast, but right now it's overcast. Sun's not supposed to break through until around the time that the leaders go off. So the course is not going to bake out. The wind is down. I think the scoring conditions are very, very favorable right now. And I expect to see somebody back in that pack make a move today and put up a 65 or a 66 and the kind of round that'll put some pressure on Matsuyama and give him something to think about coming down the stretch.
We're talking to Ron Cyrak, veteran golf journalist and Golf Channel contributor. Ron, earlier in the show, I said, of any of the four guys tied for second place, If any of all of them, I would think Justin Rose, he would be my pick. I mean, he's so steady, and I'm surprised he hasn't won more major titles. He won at Marion at the U.S. Open in 2013, but he's just been playing so well all week. And, you know, you're talking about how difficult the first hole is. He came out yesterday and birdied the opening two holes, but then he bogeyed 4 and 5. So I think if anybody can make a move, he's been runner-up twice at the Masters. He knows that golf course so well. It's really about execution. But Rose really, I think, is talented enough to win more titles.
Yeah, he is. He's somebody else who is an incredible iron player, great, great ball striker. He struggles sometimes with the putter out here. I thought he did a brilliant job on, after shooting that 65 in the first round, he did a brilliant job on the second and third round when he didn't really have his A game and still went out there and took what could have been a 74 and turned it into a 72. You know, that's what champions do. The one thing you know about Justin today is he's not going to give away any holes out there. He's going to keep the pressure on Matsuyama all the way. The other person that I'd keep an eye on today is Xander Schauffele. He's capable of putting up a very, very low number. He's been on leaderboards in majors before. He's part of that incredible high school class of 2011 that includes Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Daniel Berger. He's going to win a major eventually someday. Today could be the day if he goes out there and puts up a little 66.
What's been your highlight of the week, Ron Czyrak?
Well, you know, to me, this is my 32nd Masters, and it never gets old coming here. And one of the highlights for me is the fact that there are so few people here. You can appreciate this golf course in a very, very special way this year because you can see more of the golf course. It's not buried under a sea of people. There's probably maybe 8,000 people here would be my guess, something like that. And I'm experiencing Augusta in a very, very different way than I ever have because of that intimacy that you have with the course.
And all of those 8,000 patrons were watching the three guys, Lee Elder, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player, hit those honorary tee shots on Thursday. I've never seen so many people around that first tee.
Yeah, that was quite a moment, and it really shows you how what a great job this tournament does in celebrating its history and reaching back to what, you know, 46 years ago was a difficult time for them when the first black man played in the Masters, Lee Elder, in 1975, and to include him with Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player as the honorary starter for this year was a special, special moment. And what's always really nice about that moment, too, is to see how many Masters champions, Phil Mickelson, Bubba Watson, come out to watch that. You know, their tee times are way later in the day, but they get up early, they come over, and they want to share that special moment of where these legends of the game are kicking off the tournament.
So many special moments, and that certainly was one of them. Ron Czyrak, we could talk forever, but thank you so much, and continued success. I'll catch you down the road.
Talk to you down the road, my friend. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Ron Czyrak, a veteran golf journalist, Golf Channel contributor. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dr. Craig Farnsworth, the putt doctor. Some of his students have included Hideki Matsuyama, Dustin Johnson, Nick Faldo. We'll get the lowdown from the putt doctor on all of these players when we come back. But first, let me tell you that at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're extending our title sponsorship of the Travelers Championship through 2030. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region, thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Masters Sunday. And joining me now is world-renowned doctor, the putt doctor, Dr. Craig Farnsworth, who's worked with countless stars on the PGA Tour, the LPGA Tour, the Champions Tour, on putting, of course. And Dr. Farnsworth is a doctor of optometry. He's written a couple books on putting, and he joins us now. Welcome to Talking Golf with Ann LaGorrie, Craig.
Oh, this is exciting, Ann. How are you?
Thanks for joining me on this exciting Masters final day. And let's start with Hideki Matsuyama, because I know you worked with him. And
yeah,
his putting.
Exciting.
Exactly. His putting was on fire yesterday. He birdied the 11th, the 12th. He eagled the 15th. He birdied the 16th and the 17th on his way to that 7-under-65. What were you thinking when you were watching your student, Hideki Matsuyama?
Well, I'll have to tell you, I was excited because as off and on as he kind of gets with the setup that we recommended for him, with the distance from the ball and his hands, et cetera, it was one of the first times in recent memories I've seen him stick to what we recommended, and I'm hoping that's part of what's helped him. So, putts so well. So that's kind of what I'm thinking.
You know, he was low amateur at the Masters 10 years ago, and he was second at the U.S. Open in 2017. And, you know, I always thought he was so talented and so sharp, and I often wondered what has held him back from winning a major title.
Well, he certainly doesn't lack for distance. He does quite well despite his size. And his short game is, and he's just a great eye-hand person. So along the same line, the hands kind of get him in a little trouble with his putting. And also his alignment was definitely off and his perception was off. He had a hard time getting the ball to the cup. So those are the things that we worked on. And I think when he gets into play and does what he should be doing, I think he should expect more success than what he's gotten when he kind of alters it his way, if you know what I mean.
Well, you know, there was that weather delay yesterday, and then they came back, and he was on fire. I wonder if, you know, the fact that the green softened and slowed down quite a bit, that must have been an advantage for him.
It certainly didn't hurt him, that's for sure. You found some of the others, if I remember from last yesterday, that they had trouble getting the speed just right. But Hideki was, of course, he was just knocking the pins down. So his speed wasn't as much of an issue as getting the ball online, and that he did well.
Yeah, I think the delay definitely hurt Justin Rose because he came up short on a couple putts. He just seemed like he was a little off. I mean, he did have the lead or share the lead most of the day, and then when he birdied 12th, he regained the sole lead for literally a second before Matsuyama eagled that par 5 15th. But, boy, Matsuyama just kept going and never looked back.
No, he just kind of had that look in his eyes that he knew where he wanted to put the ball, and he did it. It was impressive as you. It was as impressive a day yesterday as Justin's Rose was the day before.
That's right, Justin Rose with that 65 on Thursday, just incredible. And you know, he's looked so impressive all week, Justin Rose, and he made a clutch putt, a par save on 18, Craig. So when you work with these guys, and I know everybody's different, let's go back to Matsuyama for a second, since he goes into the final round with that 4-shot lead at 11 under. What do you work with Hideki on in particular on the greens?
Well, we spent most of the day doing some testing, and then we did setup pictures to show him why he was missing as he was, and what he could do about it in terms of his setup, which is huge for me, for my players. And then we found out that his alignment was off, and even though he used a line on the ball, and I reminded him that I was the guy that started that back in my book, See It and Sink It, and he gave me a nice bow, which was cute. He was misaligning his ball even. He would line it up at 4 to 5 feet at the very best at the edge of the hole to the left, and when we showed him through calibrating that line and getting it straight in the middle of the cup, he thought it was aimed at the right, at the right edge. And we had to find a way for him to appreciate straight, and believe it or not, at 5 feet. So you see that a lot with players. And in his case, obviously his perfect putt was 4 feet, was hitting the right, the left edge, unless it fell in, if you know what I mean. Or he pushed the putt or opened the blade. So we tried to get all the conditions to be not only accurate but comfortable for Hideki.
So when you say alignment issue, he is basically just positioned differently. He needs to reposition what, his feet, his putter, is his vision off a little bit? What, when you say alignment issue with Matsuyama, what was it?
Well, it was two things. It was aim and alignment. When he stood behind the ball and aimed the line on the ball, he did not aim it correctly. He aimed it at the left edge. And so we had to get him to realize that by getting it straight, which we showed him where that was, and then getting him behind the ball, he had to determine if his left eye dominant was best with the, by closing his right eye or using both eyes, squatting down, standing up, or moving the head back and forth a little bit from left to right. So you had to work with the player to see what, where he sees straight as straight. And that becomes a big problem, and that's why you see good shooters or poor shooters in the NBA and college basketball and everything else, from pitching to batting. People don't localize targets as accurately as they think. Even though they see a target clearly, they may be looking a little left or a little right, and then that's where their error occurs. And you get very few people that have incredibly correct alignment, and that's what makes the difference.
And you could tell that he had correct alignment the second he lined up to these putts yesterday?
Say that again, Ann.
Could you tell that his alignment was, well, you probably couldn't, because how could you, right?
Yeah.
What did you notice that he took from your lessons that he was doing so well yesterday?
Yeah, the only thing I could really tell was that he was definitely paying attention to the correct distance from the ball, from his toes to the edge of the ball, which got his eyes in a good position. And I could also see that the hands were in a better position on the handle, as opposed to times he gets these hands too low and too close to his body, and so he had his hands a little higher over the last couple of days, and that looked so much better than what we wanted him to do.
All right, let's move to Dustin Johnson, Craig. As I know, you flew to Jupiter, Florida last June and worked with Dustin Johnson and his brother, Austin, his caddy, and Dustin went on last year to win the FedEx Cup and, of course, the 2020 Masters in November. But shockingly, 5 months later, in this Masters, as the defending champion, Dustin Johnson does not make the cut. He three-putted 6 times in 2 rounds. He said he was coming up short. It's easy for even the top players in the game to fall out of their putting routines. And he said his speed was awful.
Yeah, no, it really was. And he wasn't sharp talking to his agent. He wasn't sharp from tee through green. It was just one of those, you know, weeks, I guess, you go through where you expect to do well and you know the course and you've dominated the course before. You know, 20 under par and walk away with the field, and then you come out and you think it's all going to fall in place again. And so I'm not sure what his preparation was. We'll chat about that down the road. But sometimes it just isn't your week, and it sure wasn't his.
Right, and that happens. I mean, golf is just the hardest sport on the planet. But could you share what exactly you worked on with Dustin Johnson when you went to Jupiter last June and spent some time with him?
Well, we found out that he was a field putter and really didn't aim. He just kind of stepped up with what he felt was the read. And so it didn't take us long to prove that wasn't a good concept. And so we taught him to use the line on the ball. We taught him how to use it accurately. We worked with him on perception, because when he looked from the ball to the cup and he actually perceived the hole as shorter than where it was, as most people do. And he was actually putting incredibly well to his perception, but that wasn't reality. So we got him to look beside the ball from ball to cup and move his eyes back and forth to appreciate real distance. And to his intelligence and his athletic ability, that just worked so well for him. So it was not instant, but almost instant gratification. And we also found that his alignment was off with his body, and his arms were not parallel, his forearms. So we actually worked with him on that, and that's when he came up with that, putting his left arm in front of his body and getting his right elbow tucked more, and which was not done quite as accurately, almost like a casual thing this week, which was a little disturbing for me because it was a little too savant and not as accurate as it has been.
I'm surprised that he wouldn't reconnect with you, you know, a couple weeks before his title defense. Were you surprised he didn't call you?
Yeah, sometimes. He's probably known as not the greatest communicator in the world. And, you know, good news, bad news. He doesn't get all tied up with what people think, et cetera. And, yeah, I kind of expected a little more feedback than that. But, you know, between deciding on the Masters dinner and all the other things, I think that his ability to handle distractions, especially with a Masters win, is something that you have to work on. And that probably was a distraction to his proper preparation. That's what I'm thinking.
Right, good point. I mean, just so busy. These guys go through so much in addition to practicing and competing, particularly as a defending champion. So he was a good student, though, right? I mean, he picked it up very quickly and had incredible results just months after you guys worked together.
He actually took every training aid. He took every piece of advice. And as I say, the definition, one of the big definitions of an elite performer is the ability to listen. He listened incredibly well. He took it all in. I can't think of a thing we recommended that he didn't jump all over, from training aids to suggestions for the stroke and setup. So, yeah, I was incredibly impressed. But as you know, they can take it to the next level, and he sure did with his athleticism. Very impressive.
I'm talking to Dr. Craig Farnsworth, the putt doctor, and I know you worked with Nick Faldo when he won his third green jacket. You were at Augusta National and walking along and watching Nick. That was some tournament that year. Talk about your experience working with Nick and being there at Augusta National when he won.
Oh, yeah. Well, we started with working with him in December of 95, and by the time that the Masters came along, he'd gone from 76 to first in putting, and as he said, it had all to do with getting the ball online and his basic vision problems that actually had him aiming left of the target. We've worked with him a lot on visual drills, and then during the Masters, we worked every morning and every evening, believe it or not, at the house he was renting, on visualization and visual drills that he took to the course, and gave us a lot of credit. And now I have two Masters flags in my house.
Did you celebrate with him when he won that third green jacket?
We have celebrated many a time, and yes, he's a good friend.
I love it. I love it. That must be so satisfying for you when you see all your hard work with these students pay off big time when they become, you know, Masters champions, et cetera, et cetera. That's just unbelievable.
It's very rewarding. It makes it all worthwhile.
Well, I know you're a doctor of optometry, so how important is having good vision in putting?
Well, you know, if you think about it, visual skills have a lot to do with the ability to aim the line, depth perception, et cetera, even green reading to a point. And so we're not talking about eyesight so much, needing glasses or contacts. We're talking about visual skills that relate to judging accurate distance, judging visualization accuracy, which we'd say would be how well do you visualize accurately the speed of the ball going to the cup before you putt. Those type of things we work a lot with. We do some drills, like with Hideki. He had a real laugh at a drill we did, which was called path visualization. And I reminded him of a player we worked with years ago from Japan, Isao Aoki, and the fact that Hideki actually did the visualization drill much better than Isao did. And that Isao finally, when he learned how to use his eyes properly, ended up winning two out of the next four Champions Tour events and lost in a playoff in one and finished third in another, and all because he started using visualization more to his credit for distance and on the greens, obviously.
Who are you picking to win as we wrap up this segment, Dr. Farnsworth?
Well, I think I've got to go with Matsuyama. He's just has it all, and I know he'll keep doing what he's doing. And a four-shot lead's pretty tough when you're putting and playing as well as Hideki is.
You said it. Boy, well, I'm going to book an appointment with you very soon. Dr. Craig Farnsworth, the putt doctor, congratulations on all your success. And your student Hideki Matsuyama, four shots in the lead at 11 under, on his way, perhaps, to his first major title. We'll talk to you down the road, Dr. Farnsworth.
Right.
Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Golf. All right. My thanks to the putt doctor, Dr. Craig Farnsworth, to veteran golf journalist Ron Syrak, to Ed Arzuman in the studio. Talking Golf with Anne Liguori was brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Hey, stay tuned for the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf. Enjoy the Masters, everyone. Be safe, and I'll talk to you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Anne Liguori.